Hey, welcome back to Create Pod, a podcast about the art of podcasting. My name's Mike Moody, and today, my co-host Grant Davis and I are talking to Matt Cisneros. Some of you might be familiar with Matt. He's the co-founder of Backyard Ventures here in Austin. Backyard connects podcasters and other content creators with brands looking to sponsor podcasts. Matt works with great shows like The Daily Stoic, The Ross Boland Podcast. He's partnered podcasters with brands like Quip, Away Travel, Felix Gray, Postmates, just to name a few. Matt knows pretty much everything there is to know about landing a sponsorship for your podcast. And we ask him tons of direct questions about that. He gives great advice for podcasters of all levels looking to land a sponsorship or just looking to make a show that attracts a great sponsor. So hope you enjoy this episode. You can find Matt at Backyard Ventures at wearebv.com. Let's get to it. Here's the interview. Matt, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I think Matt is our first non-podcaster guest.
You've been on podcasts.
I've been on podcasts here, yes, but it's not my day-to-day is not podcasting.
Right. Oh, you've been to the studio before. You've been on Ross's show.
Correct.
Ross Boland podcast. So you're no stranger to the mic.
I'm not. Oh, I guess a little bit. I've done it, but I'm not you guys.
Oh.
This microphone is an extra appendage for us.
Yeah.
We love it.
So with Backyard Ventures, you help podcasters monetize their shows. You also help other content creators monetize their content. Can you tell me more about exactly what you do? And the company's based here in Austin, right?
Correct. So based here in Austin, Texas, it essentially exists to allow content creators to do what they're good at, which is creating content, and myself do what I'm good at, which is monetization and brand development. So kind of the premise of the company and the bane of existence is that I essentially noticed that there were a lot of content creators trying to split their time between not only having to grow their show on the content side and developing an audience, but then also saying, oh God, I have to also try to make money against this. And so what I've done for the last, call it almost 9 years now in media, previous company was growing revenue. And so when starting Backyard Ventures, it was more to facilitate deals so that content creators could sit there and say, God, I don't have to do that. Thank you. Like, I can pass this to you. You're going to do it better than I can. The flip side of that is that I'm not going to sit there and pretend that I can go create a podcast and be as good as my clients that are good content creators. So it's just right. Complementary skill sets.
I wanted to go in kind of ask you some granular questions. Sure. About podcast advertising and, you know, when it's time for a podcast to say, okay, I have enough listeners. There's a groundswell of people listening to me and I can find an advertiser and I can go out and find somebody like you.
Right.
Let's just talk about generally about the metrics. Like, where do you want to be as a show where you can start monetizing your podcast with sponsors or attract sponsors?
So it's kind of I don't want to say a loaded question because you didn't mean it that way, but
I know it depends.
Right. It's
probably
right.
The answer.
So I think it's all an intent, right? So if you're a show that has 100 people listening to it, the realistic aspect is, yeah, you're probably not going to attract sponsors tomorrow. But if you care that much and you have a sponsor out there that's actually ideal for you and fitting, then yeah, they might want to hit your 100 people, right? So it's how do you want to allocate your time and what's your dependency upon income off of your show? If we're talking just, hey, very rough numbers, like I need X downloads to make Y dollars, I think the attraction hits from advertisers around the 10,000 downloads per episode mark.
And we're talking per episode in the span of like a month or
yeah,
more.
So if you're talking to an agency or a brand, they're going to say 30 days, but typically like 30 to 45 days. Mm-hmm. So just trailing days per episode on average. But I that's not to discourage people and saying like, oh man, that's so far-fetched to go make money, right? There's so many ways you can do it. You can have that show that has 1,000 downloads and say, for instance, Star Trek show, right? It's not far-fetched that a brand or Star Trek, et cetera, wouldn't want to call and say, hey guys, you have a 1,000 very, very hardcore fans, which might be 10 times more valuable than a 10,000 download show that just has some listeners that chime in here or there, like don't have that engagement that your show does. So I think it's truly dependent upon value of the show, which deeper question, which I'm sure we'll get into, which is where the dollars are truly valuable, right? It's like I said, 10 to 1 doesn't necessarily mean it's 10 times as valuable. It just means that the dollars on a flat scale exist to give some rate, right? So, in a non-discouraging way, or I guess in a more empowering way, is the value of a show is the engagement of your audience.
Right.
So that's truly where you should make that decision when creating that content. Am I doing this for myself, which is great, or am I doing it to get an audience really engaged in following what we're saying or talking about because we believe in it and the value's there?
With some of the brands that you work with, mm-hmm. chopping up the analytics, are they looking at just download numbers like from your host, or if you have your podcast on multiple platforms, say you have a traditional podcast where you upload a media file to media host and you have your traditional stats from that media host, like a Libsyn or a Acast, mm-hmm. but you put out that same podcast, same content mm-hmm. as a video on YouTube, and you also have a good social media following. Are these brands looking at all of that, or are they just really focused on those initial audio podcast download numbers?
So that's really dependent upon the brand or the agency you're working with. So I've got one client in particular who audio, he does 35,000 downloads an episode, but he puts his episode on Instagram TV and also on YouTube. And so as I'm selling those, I'm saying, each episode truly is getting 80,000 plus downloads. Mm-hmm. And I sit there and fight for it because it's like, it's the consumption method that you're actually selling against, right? So if the 23-year-old guy in Michigan happens to watch it on YouTube, but purchases, we'll call it a Lisa mattress because he watched it there, why would we not count that?
Right.
And so, you know, there are some combative email exchanges of people saying, no, like we're only going to go against audio downloads. To which I kind of counter, well, all right, the price is actually going to be a little bit higher because it's unfair that it's an ecosystem that you're truly building, right? Like you want people to buy into your brand or your show, et cetera. And so because podcasting is still kind of Wild West, I think a lot of these brands just say, oh, like if you got it off Libsyn or you got it off Podbean or Podtrac, whatever it may be, that's the number we want. But truly, it's in my opinion, it's based on consumption. So
yeah.
if you're hitting that ad, that pre-roll, that mid-roll, whatever it may be, it counts. Mm-hmm. So I think it's getting a little bit more open to that, but traditionally it's been just like the most generic, go to this website and what do the numbers say? And that's kind of how it's lived to date.
I would definitely think that expanding into a market like Instagram or Snapchat also right. kind of opens you to a younger demographic
right.
that might be very appealing to particular advertisers.
Absolutely.
So you don't want to ignore that.
No, absolutely. And I think the bigger thing that the advertisers worry about that I deal with all the time is we want to know that if you're using that code, Mike or whatever the code is, that it's coming off of an audio download. Because Ross, for instance, we have advertisers that will do social posts as kind of an added value component or included in the ad deal, and they want to do a separate code because they want to be able to track where it came from, which I understand.
So one code on the audio, another code on social.
Right, right. So, which I get, but if you're recording the podcast with video, I mean, you're not going to sit in there and then edit in like, oh, for YouTube, you know, use code Mike2 for,
right.
you know, whatever it may be.
I mean, aren't they still getting their value, their bottom line? And even if someone didn't listen to that particular episode, they still caught them on the social?
Absolutely.
Later? Like so they're invested in the brand.
Right, absolutely, which is truly what you want because that grows right. engagement. But I think on their end, because it's still Wild West, as I said, I think they have these metrics of just kind of like, as things evolve, oh God, like if it's an agency, our brand said we need it for this. And so it's almost a panic. Like we can't count it. But I mean, a lot of times it's like in the monetization side of things, it's like, okay, well, if we exceed your expectations, you're not going to pay us more, right? So for us getting your brand out there and hitting these other mediums, it's really not only building the show, but it's helping the brand as well. So long answer there. But yeah, I mean, I think audio is traditionally right now what's being counted as the component of measure for value. But I think there are people adapting and understanding that there's more out there than just the audio clip.
It sounds like that if your show is at a point to where, you know, you're getting the 35,000 downloads mm-hmm. plus 50,000 downloads, but you're on multiple platforms like YouTube and social, it sounds like if you are looking for a sponsor that's going to honor all of that,
right.
You know, all your different platforms that you're putting your content on, you need somebody like you who's going to go to bat for the power of all those different distribution platforms.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that kind of goes to the point of my company is that, you know, how long it would take for you to be really good at the content piece. And we keep going back to Ross because he's an easy example because he comes in and works with you guys.
And I don't think we've said Ross is your client.
Yeah. So Ross is a client of mine.
Ross Bolin.
Ross Bolin podcast, Oysters, Clams, and Cockles, and Freeze on Motor Function as well. And so for him, it's like, I think he would say this not to speak for him, but I don't think he could achieve the success he's achieved with having to straight from going to record a podcast, think about how he's going to go sell that podcast, which as I said earlier, reciprocally, I couldn't be good at what I do if I was pretending to go do Ross's job. It's not my forte.
I don't think anybody can do his job.
Yeah, it's a lot. So it's something that I think goes hand in hand, and a lot of people I think might sacrifice the true value of their show's potential by attempting to take full control of the whole operation.
Right. So here's another probably it depends question. What's the average CPM looking like these days?
Totally.
For a pod.
CPM for those that may not know is just the value per 1,000 impressions, or in this case, downloads. So I will say a black and white answer is I will say in the $20 to $25 range, but there's like a host read, right? So if you guys are right now, we cut to an audio clip and you guys read it for Home Depot, whatever it may be, that value is greater than Home Depot just cutting in an ad because there's that lifestyle component of you guys reading it and your audience buying into what you're saying and it really being an aspect of the show rather than just, you know, Home Depot saying, hey, we're Home Depot, use this code. So that's a variable, but I'll say as low as dynamic insertion is essentially something that people can kind of just cut clips in and put, you know, you've got some more remnant type space, which is you have room for an ad, but you didn't sell it. So can we include this in there? And that can get super low. I mean, that's like $5 to $10. I feel like I'm fortunate that I don't have too much experience in that because my clients have all been on the same page with me as to let's do this as great as we can and not do it for that last dollar, not squeeze that nickel out of it. Let's do it for the sake of us all growing and having that recognition with our clients being the brand partners and the agencies so that we're not just the nickel and dime mm-hmm. guys because a lot of my clients actually are more on like the $30 CPM range because we kind of stand tall and say like, hey, we know our value and if that's not you guys, then I guess that's fine.
Right.
So obviously there's a little bit of wiggle room, but there's the exception of if you're doing an annual ad deal and they come in saying, hey, we're going to spend X dollars with you and do 20 spots this year, whatever it may be. It's a little bit of a reduced rate just because there's that guaranteed income or revenue. But as a whole, I would say $20 to $30, 30 being on the high end. But if your show has high engagement in an audience that really, really follows you and is going to listen to every episode, I mean, you can demand a little bit more.
With the host-read ads, do you generally work with the podcast on how they should handle the messaging? Do you kind of see there's a lot of approaches I've heard
right.
from podcasters. Some will rag on the write-up of a particular ad, like Pod Save America. Like right. always, they're just making fun of the copy, right?
Right.
Other people will go all out and maybe use a little bit of blue humor that sure, like sometimes is good for their particular audience, but I wonder like how that kind of gels with the advertising partners as well. Like, what do you look for when you're kind of like talking to the podcasters themselves?
So the first part of that is that each advertiser should give you copy, right? Copy points, because those success metrics are dependent upon making sure that their company is painted in that light of, we are this shoe company, we're made in Peru, it's, you know, husband, wife who used to live there, whatever the story is.
Right.
So you got to tell that story so people actually buy into the brand, because you can only do so much, right, to complement the brand. Beyond that, I mean, you look at somebody like a Howard Stern, who's what, the most listened to radio show that's ever existed. Yeah, similar to Pod Save America. I mean, he's almost poking fun at the ads, right? That's one thing when you're that big and you're at scale. When you're not even that scale matters. I think when you're somebody who's in that can potentially get in trouble for poking fun at the ads, because Pod Save America, they're literally looking at them saying, we don't really care. We just know you have so many people listening. Like, please read this.
Right. It's so, kind of the trade-off there.
Totally. So the second part of that is saying, should it be, yeah, does it need to be like organic? Do I kind of tell each host what to do? That goes back to the premise of they know what they're doing because they're good content creators, right? Like, I have not worked with people who had big shows before because they were kind of basket cases and needed handholding and, yeah, you know, stuff like that, to where it's like, would the money have been great for a little bit? Yeah, but then I'm sitting there having to hold hands, et cetera. At the end of the day, you know, 15th Ross Bolin reference, Ross sees something, he knows gonna how to incorporate that organically into the show. But in addition to that, we make sure that we're only partnering with brands that are a natural fit. Mm-hmm. Because if Ross is sitting there reading about, I'm trying to think of the most random thing, some light bulb company, it's like, how badass are these light bulbs? Like, let's be real, right? Like, right. Come on.
Well, if it's a blue light,
yeah,
you know,
maybe.
Then he can get into it.
Totally. It's all, you know, trying to think of the most, I'm looking at a locker right now. Like, why is that the best locker company? Like, yeah. Okay.
But it is impressive. Like, you know, we both sit in on producing his show and seeing the different brands and how enthusiastically he can pivot to advertising a particular product.
Absolutely.
And know how that fits with his audience or the proper way to sell that. I think that's what I'm kind of interested with, like how advertisers find a particular person. They listen to a show, or you're able to know well enough, like, this particular podcaster is going to know how to sell your product properly. You just need to give them leeway and trust that they don't have to follow your copy necessarily to a T.
Right. And I think the easy answer there is, if you make that media buyer's job so easy by saying, like, guys, this is it. Like there's been times I've said, I'm trying to think of an example. Ross hasn't drank in 2.5 years, right? So I've sent an email saying, hey, Ross does not drink to a, he's big on mental health. Someone like a Headspace, right? One of the apps that allows you, what's their actual?
Like online therapy.
Online therapy, right? So Ross loves that stuff. And so if I can say, hey, Ross quit drinking 2.5 years ago, he's a big advocate for therapy. You guys need to, like, it's doing their job for them in the sense of like, okay, we're organically going to incorporate a lifestyle topic that's discussed so often anyway into this, and it's not an ad. Honestly, it's and this is going to sound so dorky, but like, we consider them partners, not advertisers, because if it's so fitting and we truly believe in it, then yes, like that's a complementary skill that we have to help those clients or advertisers do their jobs better. So that's when you're demanding the higher CPM, is because it's like, guys, like, this is something that's so great. You know, Ross and I will exchange text messages, and he's just like, God, our partners, our advertisers right now are so good. And that's just like where he and I both feel so great about things, because that's when you've made it, right? That's when you're not sitting there squeezing the nickel out of cringing when you're saying, oh, the Blue Locker company is so great, you know? So that's when it feels good. So
that complementary relationship.
Absolutely.
Show and partner.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the fun part of it all.
But do you end up having the occasional friction where either the advertiser or the podcaster is really unhappy with the relationship? Maybe a podcaster is like, I don't actually want to read an ad from these people. No.
So with my company, that's kind of a big aspect of it, is that they are my client. So Ross, my client, a handful of others. It's their decision, man. Right. You know, like I have never counted because it doesn't matter to me, but how many dollars I could have made or we could have made off of doing some BS non-relatable client or ad read. No, I mean, it's always like to any one of my clients is a text away. Do you like this or not? I mean, for every single one of them, I could give the answer, but I always just say yes or no. You decide. Because then it's like, that's a full approach, right? We're not sitting there like nobody's cringing. No one's like,
Right.
And there's been times that each are like, I can see it working. Let's try it. So sometimes it's not always that immediate fit, but it's crazy how many random companies actually end up just taking off with one of my clients because it was worth a try. But once again, yeah, we don't ever say like, all right, like we got this deal, like read that. And it's just uncomfortable. So
right.
That's a big, like I brought on a client last week. I sent her 24 partners that once I got the deck built, et cetera, sent it out to all my contacts and agencies and brands. And literally, I think it was 3 hours. It was 3 hours. I got 28 replies saying we're interested. And she replied back saying, I'm interested in talking to these 8. You know what I mean? So like, right. How many more dollars would we have made had we just said yes to all 24? But the value of the show is then diluted. You know, we decided, let's just do one ad read per show. Mm-hmm. But she's got 4 or 5 episodes a week. So, I mean, the money's there. So it's not about the money. If you think about the objective before money, money comes. So it's, if I can help her build her show and not get the kickback of, God, like you're selling out, you know, then the show grows and the people actually, they don't care that you're selling ads because they trust that you're doing it with the right partners and for the right reasons. It's when you're a female show pitching some completely unnecessary product because you want to make a buck, that's when people are resistant to the change.
Right.
So it's just being true to yourself essentially and your clients, which would be the podcast show in my case.
So with a media agency like yours, mm-hmm. has there been, or do you think there will be a time where you do see a smaller show and you do see value in that and you see that this show can grow totally. And really attract a lot of listeners. So you take them on as a client, mm-hmm. even if they're not in that 35 to 50,000 plus downloads an episode range.
Right.
Yeah, like will an advertising agency like yours potentially work with a show like that? And what would be kind of the first steps of you working with a talent or a show in sure. that range?
Yeah, if I believe in the show, absolutely. And something that I'm making a point to do this year is I'd like to hire like a more junior salesperson to kind of onboard those types of shows. By no means are they beneath me. It's that my time is needed on my current clients that are, you know, have a higher demand essentially. But I think there's something to be said about like helping shows, like foster these shows, grow these shows, do everything I can with my knowledge and background, et cetera, to help them grow. And then obviously the right thing to do would be like, cool, we want to keep working with you because you helped us in this aspect. So absolutely. And I mean, once again, if a show's got 10,000 downloads, but it's the most engaged show you could see, that's equivalent to a show with 50,000 downloads. Like who cares? So it's all on the pitch, which is what I feel like I'm good at, is painting this picture to these brands and saying like, guys, you got a, here's why it's of value, and them truly understanding that. So there's a lot of shows that uniquely, I mean, one that, well, I won't say the name, but you recently introduced me to, that's smaller. And I was like, guys, your value is in your niche. So you're doing live stuff that's, you know, live shows, et cetera. Like that's where you can really get those partners. And one, and I told that person as well, I said, don't go get, HelloFresh is not who needs to be on your show. It needs to be brand X, Y, or Z that's completely fitting, who's going to see your audience and say, we can get in front of all of these people who are showing up to hear you guys speak. Like that's true value.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, it's truly, do I believe in it or not? Is it fitting for me or not? I mean, that's just like the partners that we work with and bring on as ad reads. If it's not something that I can see myself be fitting with or kind of be in line with, then I might just pass them on to someone else or take the phone call and say, hey, here's what I would do. But yeah, I think it's valuable to be able to have some fluidity to it all with who you're working with, right? Like, be on this roller coaster with them because you care, mm-hmm. not because you're sitting there just trying to make a dollar.
So if people are listening to this and they're thinking, I want to get into doing podcasting. I don't really know a direction mm-hmm. to go. Some people might want to swing big, figure out how they can get the biggest audience with doing a show that has broader appeal.
Right.
But you're also saying there is a path forward for people that go very, very niche. They could try and thread through. And if they are able to attract and really get engagement mm-hmm. from passionate audience members that way, that is still viable as long as you can show that engagement.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the existence of Patreon, right? Is so right. that you have a fan base that really likes what you do, and they're showing you that they like what you do with their wallet. So, I mean, that's the beauty of it all, is that you can be a smaller show. I mean, I, like I said, I don't produce my own show or anything, but you guys have a Patreon, and I can't imagine when you get an email saying you have another backer, like, even if it's $5, like, that's so cool that some random guy in New York City is listening to your show, right? So, beyond money, I think seeing your show grow and have that engagement and have that following via a Patreon is incredible. And then what do you then do? You make t-shirts, you make hats, you make all of these complimentary things that then allow your brand to live outside of just audio.
Right.
So that's where the true value lies, is growing that audience. I mean, people tune into Howard Stern every single day on Sirius because they like Howard Stern, right? They listen to Ryan Holiday on the Daily Stoic because they like what Ryan has to say. So there are broader, you know, you look at an ESPN, it's just general sports. There are figureheads there that you might tune in for, but that's more of a, you know, a wide range of things. So yeah, I mean, if you're a smaller show and you're sitting there wondering like, oh, what do I do? Or I'd like to make a little bit of money. Like, if you're passionate about it and you actually care and put that time in, then it's not getting to 100,000 downloads. It's getting a little deep here. It's happiness, right? So if the happiness is generated by saying, hey, there's 50 people in the country that care about what I have to say or in line with what I have to say, that's true value to me. And it's, you know, one thing that Ross has kind of preached that I think is great is he gets people that say, hey man, you know, I was really down on myself and I listened to your show and now I'm, you know, I'm happy and I've found peace, et cetera. So if you're doing that and you're a startup podcast and 50 people across the country feel that same way or get that feeling that you have put out, then like that's winning to me.
Right.
And that's separate of money, but that's fulfillment.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I wanted to paint a few scenarios for you and see what you think about them.
Let's say you have a Star Trek podcast.
That gets about 5,000 down. No, I've heard stories, and obviously you have and or read about podcasts that haven't launched yet, mm-hmm. but attract maybe a presenting sponsor before right. they produce a season of a show. What is the likely scenario of that happening with maybe a mid-range talent, somebody that does have a good following, mm-hmm. maybe a regional, local following? And what is the process for that to attract, you know, kind of a presenting sponsor that's going to sponsor like an entire season of right. 8 to 10 episodes that are going to be produced within the year?
So, one, it's a really good question. Two, presenting sponsors are pretty infrequent, to be honest. There's Bob Menery, right? This guy who's on, he's got, I don't know how many followers on Instagram, but, you know, call it a million. I think it's more. Bigger on YouTube. It's kind of just like a hilarious, absurd sports kind of guy. So he, in this scenario, did not have a podcast and was launching one, but I think any brand who was going to work with him knew what they were getting into because of his engagement via his social following. So on something like that, I think it's someone saying, in not every scenario, but hey, if I get in right now, I can maybe do it for $100,000 instead of a million next year. Mm-hmm. And so they know it's going to succeed. So mm-hmm. it's kind of low risk, high reward for them. For other shows, I think it's probably more of a network effect, knowing that, hey, we've done this within the network four other times, or they know what the formula is. So they know that they're going to see that succeed beyond just the show, because they're going to get the cross promotion on the other shows and mm-hmm. all of the introductions of from show two that's getting a million downloads, et cetera, you know, pushing to new show. So I think you're getting in there at a point of something already existing with success rather than just, hey guys, we're the two guys podcast. We're launching next week and you don't know us, but we're going to kick ass.
Like, it's, right.
You know, that's a dime a dozen.
You have to show some kind of metrics beforehand.
Absolutely.
For an audience that's going to show up and be there.
Totally.
Sure.
So you've been doing podcast advertising for 9 years. And in that time, I know that a lot of things have changed, have evolved, especially with like how people have kind of reframed the value of podcasting. Mm-hmm. I think we're seeing a lot of people rushing to become podcasters, but also I've been seeing advertising kind of reach out to the even smaller, more niche podcasts.
Right.
There's also a bit of a stigma, I think, that some people might have with the idea of advertising, like, oh, you want to skip because you know here comes the advertisement,
right.
Or they're just going to be shilling for stamps.com or mattresses.
Sure.
Like, those are always the ones like early on, I
remember.
So I guess I'm kind of curious, like, how have you seen this evolve both for what you're advertising, for the appeal for it, and how people have advertised on their shows?
Absolutely. Quick edit there. I've been doing media sales for about 9 years, podcasts as a focus, we'll call it 4.
Okay.
But to that, it fits into the question because I've seen the evolvement of dollars essentially go from digital, which was, you know, call that 8 years ago, literally banner ads, to then sponsored video content, to social media, and then kind of slowly dollars trickle to podcasting. In the get-go, it was more, you know, call it 3-4 years ago. It was weird because to this day, still nobody. There's more of a craft to it, but it's slowly evolved, as you said. I think if anything, it's more that more people are willing to spend dollars on it because they're seeing other big brands do it, and you're seeing title sponsors like a Microsoft or just huge, you know, multi-billion-dollar companies, and so. I'm seeing whereas 3 years ago it was categories of, yeah, there's four mattresses, or actually we'll call it 4 years ago, there's two mattresses and they're fighting for it. And then there's the third mattress and then there's the fourth. And so people see those dollars kind of start working. And on a mattress style company, right, you're selling $1,000 mattress and you're giving an ad read $1,000, like you're spending $1,000 for, call it 30 or 40, 50,000 people, you have to sell one mattress.
Right.
So it's not really that hard. It's the one that sells $5 products that has to really sell a million of those to actually make it work, right? So I think if anything, the product categories are really opening up and you're seeing more brands get more interested in the space. And I'm doing more deals than ever of brands directly rather than agencies because they're saying like, we know this is something we have to figure out. And people are doing it. And so there's actually a lot of handholding I'm doing right now as I'm doing deals because people are saying like, I trust you, but please explain this to me. Like $1,500 to
like new brands into space
or right,
they're asking
right.
these questions.
Totally.
Yeah.
And so like you're completely like, and I'm happy to do it because if it works out for them, like it's a great partnership, right? And it's ongoing. So the money's there, it's fitting, et cetera. But it's more back in the day, 3-4 years ago, it was more of, okay, here are these 10 companies that we know spend money. And it's still, I'll say, relatively small in terms of ad dollars. And it's a sub-billion dollar advertising medium. I think it's about $700 million in advertising. And I mean, you're talking a Super Bowl commercial costing $3 million, and there's, you know, 10 of them, that's $300 million right there. So, I mean, that's on one game in 4 hours. So it's still relatively new. And I think it's only going to every single year compounding growth, but it still is Wild West, like I said. So you slowly see these brands grow and grow and grow. And I've seen so many of them go work with an agency, you know, who I speak with about getting some ad deals in place. And they put all this money into it. You like an ad agency out of, you know, New York or LA and who places, when I say agency, they're placing dollars for these brands. Their minimum test budget is, call it $250,000. And so, you know, Blue Locker brand goes to the agency and says, here's $250,000. Like, you guys know what you're doing, right? And like, yeah, but, you know, we take 15% and then we've got the monthly kind of fee to work with us. And so off the bat, that's, you know, take that off the top. And then it's like, all right, cool. They just spray and they go hit, you know, 75 different shows and they try to see what sticks. Whereas I see a lot of brands directly in house are saying, why don't we have somebody who's vetting these shows actually and saying, this is a fit because of this rather than a media planner. There's a lot of good ones out there, but, please don't be listening to this, because you spent a lot of dollars with me. But, no, there's a lot of them out there that I think their jobs are literally to just like, hey man, like go place this money on 75 different shows and let's see what works. And a lot of brands that are on the up and up to go spend 250 grand, likely not getting it back off the bat is a big investment. So I think if anything, I think people are going to get smarter about the ways they're spending money. You look at somebody like a Cash App who everybody knows them because you've heard them on a podcast, right? But truly they only, I believe, put money on 10 podcasts in the last 6 months. It's that they go big on those, which is why a Pod Save America or, you know, a Rogan or somebody like that, a huge show, which is why you've probably heard that, because it's one of those shows, How I Built This, that you're gonna hear that.
That everyone's listening.
Right. So it truly is, it's a valuable way to make your brand not only known, but to get money back. But 99% of the brands that I work with are direct response. They're not awareness campaigns.
Wow.
You know, it's crazy to think, and this is back to driving that engagement. It has to back out, right? So every time Ross reads something, he knows that his audience has to buy into this, which is why we're so particular as to who we work with, because we don't want the audience to have that fatigue of like, God, it's just, what? The Blue Locker Company, you know, again, how much did they pay those guys?
That's so not relevant to my life.
Absolutely. Right? And so it's funny because, you know, so much of what I sold 5, 6, 7 years ago was just general awareness campaigns, you know, working with billion-dollar companies saying, hey, like, please place it with some content you guys have. And all we really had to do was guarantee that X amount of impressions were going to happen. If this show right now that we're on, 1 million people listen to it, but one person converts or zero people convert, they're like, we lost our money. That's a waste. So it's really hard to take on a brand that you can't really believe in, essentially.
Right.
I think I kind of like derailed your question, but it's evolved incredibly, but I think it's continuing to evolve every single day.
I was still just caught up on 1 million people listening to this podcast. Can you imagine?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. I had another question. What are some tangible goals that you would say to podcasters looking to grow their audience, I guess, to the point where they can get advertisers, or maybe they've already gotten some advertisers, but they want to continue to kind of grow that and cultivate it, expand it?
Yes. The absolute most simple, dumbest one I will say is regularity. There are so many shows that I ran into, I won't say his name, a very famous person who has a pretty big show here in Austin. We were talking in a bar and I was like, man, your show is so great. I love it. But I hate that when I walk my dogs, I don't know that it's going to come out once a week. It'll go in hiatus for 4 or 5 months and then there's 2 episodes. And so first goal is just be regular with your release schedule. Like, and I don't think that's too much to ask. That means that you record, you know, unless you're a sports show and you're having to keep up with the daily, you know, whatever, but just know that you need a couple episodes. And if it's once a month or it's once a week, whatever the release schedule is, just have that regularity so that your audience actually has that trust built in you, knowing that they can go find your content regularly. Second of that, I'd say, don't say I need a 60-minute show because it's 60 minutes. Like how long is your content good for? It might be 30 minutes that day. It might be 50 minutes. It might be 2 hours, but don't sit there and make the goal, I have to write these segments that then end up being an hour. Like that's,
don't force it.
Right. The value is only there as long as the person's willing to listen to it. So if you're exhausted after 20 minutes, but it was badass content for 20 minutes, awesome. Like that's valuable. So I'd say set realistic goals in the sense of non-monetary, more just feasibility in allowing yourself to say, I want to do this as best as I can, not I need to do these 50 things at once for the sake of checking the box.
Right.
So after that, I would say, cool. So outside of the podcast, how am I going to engage this audience? How am I going to grow this audience? So if you're not good at social media, you probably shouldn't be on TikTok and Snapchat and Instagram and all these things, right? If you're really good at Instagram, but TikTok's not your thing, don't go try to pretend to create 15-second videos that aren't good and aren't going to go compliment your podcast.
Grant's a star on TikTok.
Yeah. Grant's that guy that got the 2 million views overnight, right?
Yeah. No biggie. So,
I would say be realistic in your growth. I think a lot of people try to do so many things because they see someone like a Pod Save America or How I Built This. I mean, you think Guy Raz is back there firing off the Instagrams? He's not. You know, there are people that are in place to make sure that these things exist, and you have to be realistic with your scale. So once again, if you have 50 people across the country really into your show, how do you engage with them? They're not going to be literally opening up your email newsletter every single day, going straight to your Instagram and then checking their Snapchat. I mean, come on. Like, you have to think about how you consume content before you actually put it out there. And it's more simple than it sounds, but when you wake up, what do? I mean, you really only have so much time to do so many things. So how do you digest the content that you actually enjoy?
Right.
Talking about the way that we consume content, is there a show maybe that you don't work with that engages you a lot and that you would potentially give money to, or you think, oh, this is a model for, they're doing it the right way,
yep,
in terms of everything you just said about cultivating that audience?
So there's so many of them. One,
you can mention a few.
Sure. One that I really like, and I'm not going to say I would give money to, but conceptually, hypothetically, I like Lance Armstrong's podcast a lot, mm-hmm, because I like that he, you know, after it all, he's very real about what happened. And I think, you know, that's a separate conversation, but, him bringing on people like Mack Brown, UT's, you know, former football coach, or just so many people that are of value beyond just sports. Like, he'll bring on former politicians, just people famous in their own right. And that doesn't mean they're rich people. It just means that they've done really cool things. So I think that place of aggregating cool people, and it's kind of, maybe it's a Texas thing to me because he brings on a lot of people that are kind of Texas-y related. I like that. But on a smaller scale, I mean, I'm more of like, if you have a Patreon or you have, I think your t-shirt's cool, there's times that I will listen to a show that I don't often listen to, and they do an ad read, and I'm like, man, they've never done an ad read. Oh, I guess I kind of need to buy a Quip toothbrush. I'll use their code. You know, like, just to kind of give them some attribution. I'm trying to think. I listen to bigger ones and then kind of one-off. So I, to be honest, if I'm going to use a code, I try not to use the bigger ones code because they're doing fine. But I kind of just dive into a handful, to be honest. I'm here and there about it all. It's more off recommendations. I'm not somebody who's literally hitting the discover button that often. But one that I really liked was Gangster Capitalism. You guys heard of that one?
No.
So that was about the college admission scandal.
Mm.
And so for me, it's more subject matter. Like, yeah. I can't force myself to listen to something that I don't really like, isn't a hobby or you know, business related, et cetera. But something more topical that like I'm into is great. I'm kind of over excessive sports podcasts because there's just so many of them. But yeah, I mean, anything business related, I'm trying to think of anything smaller, but I'll think about it 5 minutes after I walk out of here. But no, I mean, I kind of support by beyond dollars, following them on social, giving them likes. If they plug a product, if it's something that I think I could benefit of use, I'd buy it.
We're coming up on the hour.
Yep.
But I think we'd love to have you back.
I'd love to be.
And talk about not just podcast advertising, but, you know, just kind of the space and how it's growing,
mm-hmm,
a little more, maybe later on in the year, maybe in our third season. Matt, where can people find you and work with you?
So my email is matt@wearebv.com. So wearebackyardventures.com. Wearebv is the website that I operate. And other than that, social, Matthew Cisneros. That's MATTHEWCISNEROS.
Dude, this was super, super valuable. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thanks again to Matt for joining us this week. We have two more episodes to go before the season's out. Next week, Grant and I will be back with another loose roundtable episode, and then we'll have one more interview episode to go. And you can find our back catalog and subscribe at createpod.co. And you can find Matt at Backyard Ventures. Just visit wearebv.com. This and every episode of Create Pod is recorded at Permanent Record Studios in Austin, Texas, a podcast studio open to all podcasters. So visit permanentrcrd.com to learn more. Thanks for listening. I love you.